to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded August 6th, 2025. Well, the most urgent time for a hero is always now, but that doesn't always mean a new hero. Sometimes it's necessary to rediscover those whose requisite characteristics, the expertise, moral courage, and commitment to sacrifice for a larger cause, can serve to inspire others to again and join a struggle for the better world we want for ourselves and our future. Prasanna Shamaguthis is a third-year University of Windsor Faculty of Law student who too holds an advanced poli-sci degree. He's the creator of the acclaimed documentary film series Truth to the Powerless, an investigation into Canada's foreign policy. And he serves as senior editor for long-form content at The Jurist News. Prasanna's latest film, Neelan Unsilenced, is freshly out and chronicles the life and achievements of Neelan Tiruselvam, a hero of Sri Lanka's struggle to build a just and inclusive constitution. Prasanna Shamaguthis in the first half. And Canada's previous federal Liberal administration promised to stay the flow of arms and other war materiel dealings with international scofflaw Israel. Those promises were recently revealed to have been lies. Lies the current federal Liberal administration insists on reiterating. Despite the evidence, Canada has never stopped aiding Israel in its genocide of the Palestinian people in Gaza and the ongoing pogrom in the rest of the occupied Palestinian territories. More shamefully than this, perhaps, is the silent acquiescence to this complicity by the near entirety of our Canadian House of Parliament. Alex Tyrrell is the longtime leader of the Green Party of Quebec, an activist and eco-socialist. Alex also hosts the bilingual YouTube podcast show La Mentalite Verte, or The Eco Mindset, and contributes essays to a variety of publications in French and English, in print and online. He's been a loud and constant critic of Canada's political and institutional cooperation with Israel, including the recent Carney announcement his government would, quote, recognize a disarmed Palestine. Alex Tyrrell and that other green virtue, peace, in the second half. But first, Prasanna Shamaguthis and hearing Neelan again. Welcome back to the show, Prasanna.
Thanks for having me on, Chris.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course, and congratulations on the release of Neelan Unsilenced. Firstly, I want to do this right off the top. How do people find the film? How do they see it?
Well, the film is available for free. You can go to its website, www.neelanunsilenced.com. On the homepage of the website's the trailer, and if you scroll down a little bit below the trailer, you'll see a button that says, click here to watch the full documentary. If you click there, it'll lead you straight to the full documentary. The best way is through the website.
And now you're making it available for free. You're not going to get rich doing things that way, obviously, Prasanna. Why did you make this film?
The reason why I made this film is because the individual this film is focused on, his name is Neelan Tiruselvam, and he was a Sri Lankan-born Tamil constitutional scholar, politician. And during the civil war in Sri Lanka, there was a 25-year civil war from 1983 to 2009, whereby in the north and east of Sri Lanka, the Tamil minority were seeking a separate state, and they were fighting the Sri Lankan government. A majority of people in Sri Lanka were Sinhalese, and they were fighting the Sri Lankan government as a result of decades-long discrimination by the majority community against the Tamil minority. They were fighting for their own separate state, and Neelan came forward and put forward a bold constitutional reform proposal in the mid-90s during the height of the Civil War as a peaceful solution to end the conflict and to address Tamil grievances. And in the process, he was killed. Now, the war ended in 2009, and Neelan was killed 10 years prior to that in 1999. Now, currently in Sri Lanka, there is a president, Anura Kumara Dissanayake, who ran an election campaign which received overwhelming support all over the country. He received significant support among the Tamil minority community, among the Sinhalese people, the majority Sinhalese people in the south. And he ran on a campaign to bring a new constitution to Sri Lanka. that will address the grievances of the Tamil minority, that will devolve significant power to the regions of Sri Lanka, that will give autonomy. So a lot of these promises that the new president was making were things that Neelan drafted in his proposals during the height of the civil war as a solution to address the grievances faced by the Tamil minority. So the reason why I released this documentary is to educate people about Neelan Thiruchelvam, who had been so vilified in his mission during the civil war to achieve a peaceful solution. His voice had been silenced, and here we have a new president who's promised to bring forward a new constitution, but so far, since being elected almost a year now, he has not acted on that promise. So the reason why I made this documentary for free is I want it to be accessible to people all over the world, especially Sri Lankans, to watch this documentary, be inspired by Neelan, be informed about Sri Lanka's problems, and be informed about Neelan's proposals, and to seek to advocate that their president, the current president of Sri Lanka, President Dissanayake, draft a new proposal that is modeled after Neelan's vision of a just and inclusive constitution.
Well, Neelan was assassinated for his trouble. Is that part, does that go some way in understanding why the current president hasn't moved any closer to the positions that Neelan was advocating?
Well, the forces that assassinated Neelan were actually the Tamil rebel group, the Liberation Tigers of Tamil Eelam, the LTTE, and they saw Neelan as being a traitor. They demonized Neelan. Neelan himself was a Tamil, but Neelan was not advocating for a separate state. He sought to advocate to resolve Tamil people's grievances, but he sought to do that under a united Sri Lanka through what people at the time, they labeled Neelan's proposals as being federalism in all but name. And the LTTE was firmly proponents of a separate state. So any Tamil person who did not agree with the LTTE's solution of a separate state, they were regarded as being traitors. So Neelan was vilified by the LTTE as a traitor, and his voice was, in effect, silenced. And it's important to also acknowledge that when Neelan was drafting these proposals, the opposition that he received was not only from the Tamil rebel group, the LTTE, also known as the Tamil Tigers, but the opposition he received was also from Sinhala nationalists, fundamental majority ethnic Sinhalese groups, who felt that Neelan's proposals was giving too much power to the Tamil minority community, that was basically federalism was going to lead to a separate state, and they were making all these outlandish accusations. So those forces, those singular forces, still exist in Sri Lanka, and they would be a significant impediment. They might be a significant impediment towards implementing a constitutional solution. But what's so rare right now in Sri Lanka is that President Dissanayake has a supermajority in parliament, which means that he has a greater than two-thirds majority in parliament. As a result, he has full control. His party has a supermajority in parliament, so he has the ability to ram through whatever new constitution he wants for the country almost unopposed, because a significant majority of the people in parliament are first-time national politicians. They've been nationally elected to politics for the first time. So it's important to remember that President Dissanayake's party was a third party prior to his election win, and they were a left-wing, previously communist party, and they rose from being the third party status to being the leading party in Sri Lanka. It's the first time in Sri Lanka's modern history that has ever happened. As a result of that, the membership of his party, they were all newly elected politicians at the national level. As a result of this, President Dissanayake has significant, overwhelming power to implement whatever proposals he wants unopposed, because he has such supreme control over the city, over the country's parliament. And the struggle that Neelan faced during his life when he introduced these proposals as a member of parliament is that Neelan and the president at the time, President Chandrika Kumaratunga, she had less than a two-thirds majority in parliament. And so as a result of that, Neelan's proposals were not implemented. And Neelan's proposals, they were known as the August 3rd proposals. And this was introduced 30 years ago, August 3rd, 1995. And to date, those proposals remain the boldest and most progressive proposals in Sri Lanka's history that would redress the grievances of the minority communities on the island, and that would devolve power from the central government to the regions in an unprecedented manner, and it would prevent the central government from unilaterally taking away those powers that it gives to the regions. So the proposals were so fundamental and revolutionary because it dismantled Sri Lanka's unitary state structure, whereby the way Sri Lanka's governing structure operates is in a unitary system, power is excessively concentrated at the center, and whatever powers the central government gives to the regions, they can unilaterally take away. And given that the minority Tamil community has been so suspicious of the majority Sinhala community, to have such a power chain structure whereby the central government can give powers to the regions but then unilaterally take them away under any pretext, this is fundamentally unjust for the Tamil people as a political system to live under. That's why Neelan's proposals, they sought to change that. They sought to make Sri Lanka from a unitary state to a union of regions, doing away with the whole unitary system and implementing a system whereby power would be devolved from the center to the regions, and those powers could not be unilaterally taken away as a result of significant checks and balances that Neelan's proposals advocated. And no proposals since Neelan's proposals has come close in terms of its devolutionary scope and its fundamental restructuring of Sri Lanka. That's why his proposals are so revolutionary, and that's why President Dissanayake needs to model the new constitution after these proposals, and that's what this documentary seeks to inform. It also talks about other things as well, which we can get into.
Well, yeah, Prasanna, but coming from a country that's known revolution and civil war, having a supermajority isn't always having all the cards in the game, so to speak. Why are his promises not, why are they going unfulfilled yet?
The reason why President Dissanayake is not fulfilling his promises of constitutional reform is because President Dissanayake has said that he's focused on tackling corruption within the country. It's important to remember that in Sri Lanka's immediate history, in 2022, President Gotabaya Rajapaksa, who was this very corrupt politician, who was a dictatorial authoritarian politician, he was in 2009, during the final stages of the war, he was the defense secretary who was carrying out huge atrocities in its attempt to defeat the LTTE. And fast forward more than a decade later, he becomes president of the country. But his economic handling of the country led the country's economy to go into free fall. The country went into a massive recession. It was the worst economic crisis since independence. You probably heard that Sri Lankans were flooding the president's house and chased him out of the country. This happened in 2022. So there was massive economic corruption, which was as a result of decades-long neoliberal programs. It wasn't just President Gotabaya Rajapaksa's fault. Ultimately, he was the trigger, but it was decades-long neoliberal policies that led to that moment. So President Dissanayake, the reason why he was voted overwhelmingly by the Sinhalese, but also by the Tamils, is because people were so frustrated by the corrupt two-party system that had previously led Sri Lanka. They wanted a third party to come in. And President Dissanayake, he campaigned on cleaning up government, on getting rid of corruption. So President Dissanayake said, first and foremost, I'm going to deal with the economic crisis. We just had a huge recession in this country. I want to restructure our economy, and then we'll focus on constitutional reform. I've got a supermajority, so we'll worry about that later. That is President Dissanayake's mindset, and that's why he hasn't, for this fiscal year, he hasn't even tabled budgeted constitutional reform within his the government's budget. They haven't even, so it's not even on the table. Like, discussions of it is not even on the table, despite the fact that they have a supermajority in parliament. because President Dissanayake said, I want to rid the country of corruption. And to his credit, he has been praised by individuals within the Central Policy of Alternatives within Colombo, which is an independent think tank, as doing a good job in terms of tackling corruption. The problem President Dissanayake faces is he's going to lose the momentum that he has as a result of the supermajority if he keeps putting constitutional reform on the back burner. And the main obstacle that he's going to face is not from Tamils that have separatist sentiments, because a significant amount of those Tamils, they were defeated during the final stages of the civil war. The Tamils that largely live in Sri Lanka, they want their political grievances to be addressed, but they're certainly fine with that happening under a united Sri Lanka. The main obstacle President Dissanayake will face if he keeps putting constitutional reform on the back burner is among the Singla nationalists, those same Singla nationalists that oppose Neelan's proposals, because if those Singla nationalists in parliament begin working with within those of President Dissanayake's coalition and they start influencing them to not support his proposals, then he may not achieve even a two-thirds majority, despite the fact that he has a supermajority in parliament. So the longer that he delays on constitutional reform, there's a greater chance that his popularity will decline because he hasn't taken advantage of the momentum. That it's almost a year that since he's been elected, and he should have run on that momentum, and he should have hit the ground running implementing constitutional reform. But he's taking a lot of that for granted, thinking that they'll have time and they'll have the support to do that anyway. And I think that's a really dangerous gamble.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Prasanna Shamaguthis. He is a third-year University of Windsor Faculty of Law student. He also holds an advanced poli-sci degree, which helped him create his documentary film series, Truth to the Powerless, an investigation into Canada's foreign policy, a six-part series. Where can people find that, Prasanna?
So yeah, that was my first documentary series that I released. It's, you can find it on its website, truthtothepowerless.com. That's truthtothepowerless.com. And it's a six-episode series, and all six episodes are there for free as well. I don't charge people any money to see any of my documentaries.
Then you don't have to give anybody their money back. I'm just kidding. They're great, and I've interviewed a couple of the people that you feature in that documentary on this show since watching it myself. His latest film is Neelan Unsilenced. We're talking in and around that. I've pronounced Neelan's surname wrong already. Tiruchelvam. I got that off. I learned how to pronounce things on the internet, and I noticed that you pronounce it entirely different than the website that purports to know how to pronounce things. So I'm not sure, maybe I should be getting my money back from them. You also, as I mentioned off the top, serve as a senior editor for long-form content at The Jurist News. I'm looking at it right now. You've got a piece up there, less than a week old, Sri Lanka must allow international oversight into Chimani mass grave, ICJ urges. This provides some context for those unaware of the terrible recent history of the island nation, of the stakes that are being played for here politically. Do you want to describe briefly what Chimani means and what significance that has to Neelan's story?
Yes. So Chimani is a small area within northern Sri Lanka in the northern province, and it got national attention in Sri Lanka in 1998, but as a result of a rape by the Sri Lankan army of a 18-year-old girl who was coming home from school, the Sri Lankan army stopped her at a checkpoint, and the Sri Lankan army gang raped her and then killed her. And then when the child, the 18-year-old girl's mother, sibling, and neighbor went looking for her because she didn't come home, the army then killed the mother, sibling, and neighbor, also killed them, and they dumped the bodies in Chimani, underground in Chimani. And during the arrest and trial of the soldier who was accused of raping the 18-year-old girl, her name is Krishanthi Kumaraswamy, in 1996, during the trial in 1998, the soldier, Lance Corporal Rajapakse testifies that in Chemmani, there's actually 300 to 400 bodies buried in Chemmani. And when this testimony was made, when this testimony leaked to the public in 1998, during his testimony, when it leaked to the public, it was national news. Like, there's a mass grave with potentially 300, 400 people buried in the northern province in Sri Lanka of Tamils, 300, 400 bodies, this soldier is alleging. So Neelan, hearing this grievance, very well aware of the fact that Tamils were being raped by Sri Lankan army soldiers, that Tamil bodies were being buried, that people were going disappeared, that Sri Lanka had one of the largest enforced disappearances in the world. Neelan would repeatedly say that in Parliament, one of the largest enforced disappearances in the world. He would cite Amnesty International. He would cite UN human rights reports. He would cite reports by the UN Special Rapporteur. He would cite Human Rights Watch. He would cite UN conventions on the rights of minorities. He would bring international law into his speeches, advocating for the rights of Tamils. So Neelan, when he heard about, you know, this potential mass grave, Neelan made a speech in Parliament in 1998, voicing the need for an independent investigation, for an excavation done through independent means. He was citing the UN protocol for how to carry out excavations. He was citing precedents such as in Iraq, in the former Yugoslavia. He was citing precedents for how this can be done. So Neelan was repeatedly referencing international procedure for how this oversight should be done credibly. And now, in February 2025, by accident, Sri Lankan people, while they were making plans to build a Hindu crematorium, they stumbled upon some bones in Chemmani. And these bones, they just, in February 2025 this year, these bones, when they stumbled upon them, they discovered there were bones of infants and children, and then they just discovered more and more bones. Now they've discovered the bones belonging to more than 100 bodies. Infants, children, there's been some school belongings, some kids' belongings. And so now we've come to see that what the soldier had testified in 1998, that there's likely a degree of truth to it, that there's 300 to 400 bodies. And now there's a need for there to be credibility in terms of how to carry out these excavations. So what Neelan was saying in 1998, the procedure to do that, that is very much relevant now. Because there is a significant demand among the Tamil people in the northern province, where this mass grave in Chemmani is, they want independent oversight over it. And the UN has urged for independent oversight, and the International Commission of Jurists have urged for independent oversight as well. So that was the reason why I wrote that article, because I wanted to bring into light what Neelan had said in his speech to Parliament in 1998. It's still very much relevant today.
Well, and then the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Türk, you mentioned in your article, visited the mass grave site in the summer, in June of this year. Does this complicate matters for the current administration? Does this threaten to open old sores that will make the political process there even more difficult than it already is?
I think if, you know, this incident provides an opportunity for President Dissanayake to show to the Tamil community that he's different than the other presidents before him, that he's willing to bring about international oversight and credibility in terms of getting to the bottom of allegations of atrocities committed by the Sri Lankan armed forces, committed by those in power against the Tamil minority. So he could act on the advice which Neelan had given and bring in international oversight, especially given the fact that even Sri Lanka's Office on Missing Persons Commissioner, Mirak Rahim, acknowledged that we lack the infrastructure. Sri Lanka lacks the infrastructure for investigative oversight. You know, we lack the investigative infrastructure. So even Sri Lanka's own government, a member of their government, saying that we actually need international oversight. We need to follow the UN procedure in terms of how to go about doing these excavations credibly. So what President Dissanayake could do to show that he's different from all of his predecessors is to follow the UN procedure and to go about this with a determination to pursue accountability. And right now, we're not seeing that.
Well, as well as the physical excavation, there is a need to dig into the history of the country and the history of relations to solve old problems, to heal old wounds. Again, and the film is Nilan Unsilenced. The subtitle to that is The Voice Returns, The Fight Continues. Can you reiterate, as we're almost out of time, Prasanna, how people can see the film again?
You can watch the film on its website, www.nilanunsilenced.com. That's nilanunsilenced.com. As soon as you go to the website, you'll be at the homepage where you'll see the trailer. And if you scroll a little bit down, you'll see a button that says click to watch the full documentary. And if you click that, you'll be led straight to a video showing the full documentary.
Again, you're at www.jurist.org where your articles feature. You've got a lot up there and a couple in the last couple weeks about Gaza and the situation there. Canada must deploy peacekeeping troops into Gaza to end mass starvation is one. The other, explainer, what we know about Israel's proposed Gaza relocation plan. Can Canada credibly be a part of any peacekeeping troop in Gaza or be an intermediary of any kind in that conflict, given the fact that that has been revealed, that I will be talking about in the second half with Alex Tyrrell, that Canada is up to its blowholes in complicity with the current genocide come Holocaust there?
Well, the argument that I make in that article, that Canada must deploy peacekeeping troops into Gaza to end mass starvation, is that Canada, you know, we do have an obligation to end the suffering in Gaza precisely because we contributed to it. But that also means that if we're going to deploy peacekeeping troops and be seen as credible, we need to terminate our complicity in Israel's assault on Gaza, which means terminating Operation Proteus, whereby Canadian police officers train officers in the West Bank, train Palestinian security forces in the West Bank to repress Palestinians, whereby we need to end all direct and indirect export of military goods to Israel. And if we do those things, if we stop, if we terminate our free trade agreement with Israel, if we do those things and our economic and military cooperation with Israel, we will then be seen as credible so that we can deploy peacekeeping troops into Gaza and get the needed humanitarian aid in. It's not enough to just parachute in aid, which the government, Canadian government, is now doing. That is insufficient. We have an obligation, certainly under the UN Genocide Convention, to intervene when a genocide is happening. You know, Canada proclaims to be this peacekeeping nation. We founded peacekeeping. You know, so we certainly do have a legal and a moral obligation to act, but we must first end our complicity, which is what the article argues. First, end our complicity, and then we would be credible to deploy Canadian peacekeeping troops into Gaza and do what's required under international law.
Thanks a lot, Prasanna, for coming on again. The film is Nilan Unsilenced. Go to www.nilanunsilenced.com to watch the film and pass it on to your friends and to learn more about the beautiful island of Sri Lanka and its turbulent recent history. Thanks again for coming on, Prasanna?
Thank you so much for having me on again, Chris. It's a pleasure.
Well, and as I say, I'll be back after the break with Alex, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Canada and its involvement in what's going on, this shameful horror that's going on in Palestine.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York, Guerrilla Radio is everywhere at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
A century of dispossession, 100 years of broken resolutions. Now that there's been a massacre here to mark every day of the year. After they buried 1 million children, after they starved the whole population, now they say it's time to to recognize Palestine. So many years since the Oslo Accords with